Hello, and welcome to the Student Ministry Conversations podcast with your hosts, Brent Aiken, David Pruitt, and Russell Martin. This podcast is all about equipping, encouraging, and inspiring youth pastors weekly with topics that are brought to the table by youth pastors from all over the world. And now, here's your host for this week, David Pruitt.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. If this is your first time listening to us, we want to welcome you and invite you over to our website, www.studentministryconversations.org, where you can find all of our previous episodes, show notes, blog articles, and much more. Our goal is that you are inspired, encouraged, and that the things that you hear on this podcast would equip you to be a better student pastor for the church that you are serving. All right, let's get to it. Today, we are sitting down with my buddy Tyler Looney, who is the associate pastor at Christ Point Methodist Church in Lindale, Texas. Tyler, tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
Let's see. So I am about 5'11". Oh, no, you're not talking about Zeke. So 38, I'll be 39 in October. I've got a wife who I've been married to for almost 17 years and two beautiful girls. I've got Anna Grace, who will be 15 in a matter of about a week and a half. And then I've got Taylor Dawn, who will be 10 in August. And both brilliant girls, brilliant wife. The wife does children's ministry here at the church alongside me. And we've been here in Lindale for about 5 years. And I'm coming up on finishing my 17th year of full-time ministry. So originally from Lubbock. And let's see what else. I like to play basketball, so I have a great scratch on my forehead from getting blocked yesterday. Guy blocked me and followed through and scratched my head. But yeah, so that's in a nutshell. But yeah, I grew up in Lubbock, Lubbock Christian University grad, and yeah, soon to be starting at Baylor Truett Seminary. So yeah.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Man, that's really exciting. I'm excited to have you on the podcast today. Tyler and I actually did ministry together for 5 years in Canyon. Yep. I got to be his intern and eventually associate youth pastor, doing worship stuff and all kinds of other stuff. And man, it was some of the funnest times of my life, honestly. We gelled in a lot of ways, and then we pushed each other in other ways and became family. It was beautiful.
Yeah,
really.
Drove each other crazy from time to time.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
100%.
Very different personalities, although we like the same things.
We had the common denominator is Jesus. So, and one of the kids to know Jesus. Yeah, people know Jesus.
Yeah. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. There was a skateboarding, well, really longboarding more than skateboarding, but anyway, just lots of fun, man.
yeah
so some of the funnest times I've had in ministry with you. So
it was a good season. Absolutely,
it was indeed. Well, cool. So today we wanted to take a look at basically this idea of transition in ministry. So many of us get into ministry and we know that the ultimate goal is maybe to be a senior pastor one day as we get older. Sometimes it's other goals in ministry. But many of us get our start in youth ministry or children's ministry or music ministry or something like that. And you've actually had the opportunity to be in several different roles in ministry. Can you tell us a little bit about that? In your story in that?
Sure. Yeah, man. So started off with right after my junior year of high school, I went to a church camp before my senior year of high school. And that's where I felt the call into ministry, was at a church camp up in New Mexico, actually with the Church Christ Church of all groups. I didn't anticipate it being with them, but that's where I felt my call into ministry and specifically into youth ministry. And so I went to Lubbock Christian University, where I majored in youth and family ministries. And I'll never forget my first day in the youth ministry class. The one thing that the professor said is, he said, if you're here for this just to be a stepping stone for you to become a senior pastor, I want to ask you to just go ahead and change your major. Don't be a youth and family ministry major, because this is not supposed to be a stepping stone. And that was his mindset, because there were a lot of people that had it that I'm just going to go from this thing to this thing to this thing. And this is just a season of my life. And so he was really wanting for people to be lifers in the game of youth ministry. And so that was my mindset going into youth ministry, is I'm going to do this for life. But as you know, and as I'm sure all the other youth pastors that are watching this know, that man, when you're doing youth ministry, you're not just doing youth ministry at a church, right? You're also tackling other things. You might be, if you're like David, you might be leading worship as well. or maybe you're behind the scenes with the technology stuff, which is what I enjoy doing. You'll be making pastoral visits, not just to your, you know, youth kids and families, but maybe to church members that the pastor needs you to. You might fill in the pulpit and preach on a Sunday. And so I found myself doing that a lot early on in youth ministry. In fact, my first week at the church that I started at out of college in 2006, the pastor brought me into his office and said, "Hey, Tyler, I want you preaching here in about 2 weeks." And I remember being like, "Dude, I don't preach. Like, I work with the youth." And he's like, "Oh no, here you're going to preach once a month. I want you to be in the pulpit. I want you to get used to it." And so I found myself doing something that the preacher, the senior pastor, is supposed to be doing. And through that, man, I turned around and just God has kind of been shaping and molding me and molding my heart towards someday being a senior pastor. And so kind of the process went from youth ministry to police academy, which you know about, a short time there at the age of 30. And then turned around and went to Dalhart as the title was assistant to the pastor, which was a roundabout associate pastor slash youth pastor slash jack of all trades, whatever you need, you know, need done. And then from there, was called out to East Texas to be the director of student ministries, which was I know you're going to probably maybe ask me more about that later, but the call from God is the only way I know how to voice it. And in the meantime, I've since had the call, as I felt earlier on, to go ahead and start pursuing becoming a senior pastor. But it was never actually in my original plans, to be honest with you. 17 years ago, I was in it for youth ministry for life. That was my thought, is I'll be a youth pastor forever.
Yeah, for sure. I think you touched on something that was really interesting there that I think a lot of people are kind of struggling with in their position. I do think a lot of people go into youth ministry as a stepping stone. I think that is definitely true for a lot of people. But I do think that there's a lot of people like you were for the longest time, and how I currently am still, youth ministry for life. And I think it can be really confusing for a lot of, especially younger student pastors, that I think sometimes we don't do the best job in church raising up new leaders to understand that the role of youth ministry is more than just what we think it is. Like, it's not just, you know, camps and Wednesday nights and pizza and going to the schools and having fun. Like, sometimes youth ministry involves being at the hospital with a member who is struggling. Sometimes it's a role of senior pastor is burning out and you're going to have to fill the pulpit for, you know, an extended period of time. Sometimes it's a week. Sometimes, yeah. I mean, I think you were telling me the last time we talked that you were actually filling it for several months.
Last summer was 3 months. Yeah.
3 months. So that's not something that you were anticipating at that time, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so definitely the sabbatical was a planned sabbatical. But yeah, I mean, there's, right. I think the key is, David, is that probably for anyone who's not the senior pastor at the church, there has to be an understanding for ministry staff, specifically ministry staff. I'm not talking about necessarily church secretaries and whatnot, but for the ministry staff, and especially any student pastor, your role is not just student pastor or youth minister or whatever name you go by, director of student ministries, right? In some denominations, your role is to be an assistant to the pastor. So regardless of what your title is, you're a gap filler is what I'd call it. Your role is to be there to help fill gaps, to assist the senior pastor in what he views as the greater call for the church. And you just happen to have the specialty of working with the youth, but you have everything else. It's kind of like if you're walking along and there's a piece of trash, pick it up. It doesn't matter. There's nothing beneath us, right? If you go in the restroom and there's no toilet paper and there's people coming to the church, go get some toilet paper and put it on the roll. Just because I'm not the custodian doesn't mean that I don't do that, right? I'm gonna fill in the gap where the need is. And so there's nothing in anybody who's listening, there's nothing beneath any student pastor, nothing beneath any senior pastor, right? It's we're all working together to fulfill the greater call, the greater mission of making disciples, right?
That's it. That's it right there, man. I think so many times we kind of fall into that trap where it's just like, but that's not my job. You know? Or like, we'll go back to our job requirements and it's like it says that I'm supposed to do X, Y, and Z and you're asking me to do A, B, and C. And it's like,
yeah,
you have to understand going into it is that your job requirements mold to you and your season of life. Right. It'd be crazy for me to believe that. I mean, September will be 9 years here in Snyder. It'd be crazy for me to think that my role is exactly the same as it was back in 2014 when I took the job. Because I'm a different person. Number one, I've got a kid now, you know, that puts me in a different season and a different understanding than, you know, being still fairly newly married. I mean, Kelsey and I have been married for what, 9 months. We're different. We've grown. We're, you know, at nearly 33, I'm different than I was at 27. How old was I? 24. Yeah. When I started. I could kind of math, right? You know, I'm
West Texans don't know math, David. That's okay.
No, I'm a musician. I count to four. Sometimes there you six. Go. And there even then, six, we just break it into three. So, you know, four. But I mean, yeah, our church is different. We've had several different senior pastors. We don't even have the same name as what we had when I first got here. And that's fairly new. So the denomination has split, as we know. If we think that our role is going to stay the same and not be flexible, then maybe if that's all you want, and you're not willing to be flexible, maybe you're not where you need to be.
You're right. And I think sometimes at the same time, we have to recognize there's healthy boundaries too, not being taken advantage of. And at the same time, recognizing that there's some pastors who want you to just stay in your lane, and they never want for you to leave the lane you're in. And so, for me, it's been a blessing to serve alongside pastors, minus the pastor who was supposed to be here when I got here. Thankfully, he was, no offense to him, but thankfully he was gone within 2 weeks of my time here, and they brought in a new pastor through the denomination, how they function with rotating pastors. Thankfully, he moved because he was the type of pastor he wanted me to just stay in my lane. But every pastor I've served with has had a heart of, no, I want you to become as well versed. And so you're probably a lot like me on a Sunday morning. If senior pastor's gone and our youth person's gone, that's working with our youth and maybe children's persons, it's like, all right, let's fill in the gaps. And I could fill in a gap. And I think student pastors who transition into youth ministry or into being senior pastors, in a lot of ways, have an advantage that someone who just goes straight from seminary to being a senior pastor does not have. And that's not to knock anyone who's and saying they're not effective if they go straight from seminary to pastor. But I think people who have gone from student ministry into becoming a senior pastor, maybe they go on like I am, student ministry to associate pastor, and then prayerfully someday senior pastor, we have a different perspective of how ministry works, and we have insight. And for people who are working with the youth right now, I have a different perspective of, let me help you and assist you. And then again, the gap filler, it's kind of like being the Swiss Army knife for the church. It's kind of a fun thing, right? Yeah. Except for I can't play guitar, man. I can play the kazoo, but they won't let me do it in our worship. So
I'd have you in a heartbeat, dude.
I've tried. They don't like the kazoo.
They don't like the kazoo. Well, tell them.
So I do the pro presenter or Facebook Live or the sound or, but yeah. So again, I think you're right though. I think that the big thing with, you know, wherever you're at, whether it's student ministry, or you're feeling called towards associate or senior or maybe children's or maybe just being a volunteer, maybe being bivocational. I mean, whatever it is, it's the important thing is being where you're called. And I've quoted this a lot to people lately, but the truth is we have this mindset that, man, I would die for my faith. If someone came in here today and said, hey, you know, if you're a believer, I'm going to take your life. Would you be willing to die for your faith? And I was like, yeah, in a heartbeat, I would do that. And maybe you would, but on the flip side, would you die daily for your faith? And so what I mean by that, would you die daily to your desire to be where the world tells you you should be or where you want to be flesh-wise and be where God calls you to be, whether that's in youth ministry or working at McDonald's or being a senior pastor. And I think a lot of times you know where you're supposed to be because you probably are having arguments with God often about you don't want to be where you are, going, God, why do you have me here? And are you sure this is right? I think that's, for me, always been affirmation of I'm in the right places. There's discomfort. I'm being stretched.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And then the other thing for me, like when I get into those positions, like I find myself not so much questioning that I should be in youth ministry, but when a couple of things in our specific ministry is that when you're having a really bad day and you go to youth and you feel so filled up mm-hmm. by just being around these students and being able to share life with them and to share obviously the word of God with them and in my role being able to worship as well and just be silly. And when you go into it feeling like, man, I don't know how I'm going to get through this, and you leave feeling so fulfilled that it's like, man, that was awesome. Like, let's keep going. Like, let's not stop.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of an incredible feeling when it, and so affirming when you get to that place where you're just like, man, this is exactly where I need to be because it's so life-giving,
mm-hmm. you know? Yeah, I agree. I got a little tickle in my throat, Dave. I told you so. You're good. Forgive me.
Always.
I put a cough drop in, so I don't do that to you.
Good call.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I wanted to also bring up, I find a lot of student pastors who are in the conversation or starting the conversation in transitioning roles, whether that be moving, we always say moving up to a pastor, which I always kind of laugh at that because it's not a promotion. It might come with a little bit more money, but it's not a promotion. It's a different role. As you were saying, you know, it's adapting. But when you were in Dalhart, if I'm remembering correctly, it's been a few years, you had the intention of becoming a senior pastor, like not even so much an associate, like you wanted to go straight into. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, to some extent. So in the denomination, you know, I was serving in, and the one I was serving in, because we're now no longer apart, there was an opportunity to become ordained, whether it was to become just for that local church or globally to be, you know, ordained and recognized as a pastor. I don't know necessarily that I was thinking senior pastor straight away, but just I felt that call and that nudging already. And unfortunately, as I voiced that to the leadership who is supposed to be the ones helping me set that up and help me in that path and help me walk through that, they dropped the ball for one reason or another. They dropped the ball. It might have been personality conflict, maybe, which I wasn't aware of. So an unknown personality conflict. Maybe it was time. Maybe it's just they completely forgot. But even the pastor I served alongside didn't really do a good job in assisting me, going, hey, let me help you walk through this. It was just kind of, okay, we'll talk about it. And it never happened. But yeah, that was kind of where I started feeling that nudge. I think for me, David, honestly, the recognizing that God had a call in my life to expand, I'll say expand my scope of ministry to the place of doing senior pastor work or associate pastor work. That happened to me more so post police academy. Whenever I was in police academy and then I turned around and felt the call to leave police academy, which is a whole other story. It was in that 6 weeks of praying and processing through after dropping out of the academy. I'm a police academy dropout. So for anyone who's feeling like a dropout, it's okay. If God's called you, you know. And it was there that in that season that I really felt like God again had renewed a covenant with me and my call to ministry, and where I really was feeling this sense of God going, hey, there's more than just youth ministry I have for you in your future. The fascinating thing about that is as I talked with my wife about that, and I talked with my parents about that, it was kind of this like, yeah, we already knew that. We already knew that. As I talked to friends about it, like, yeah, we already knew that that's a call in your life someday. But yeah, unfortunately, again, Dalhart was one of those places that it was a great season for my family, but leadership was not quite where I was praying it would be for one reason or another again. But it wasn't the right timing either. This has been a perfect place here in Lindale to transition into being an associate pastor and going through the ordination process and whatnot. And then, you know, you even think about with the denomination having the split like it did, it's been a blessing that I was not ordained in that particular denomination. Yeah. And it's going to be beautiful when I officially have my ordination. So I've already become the local pastor, and now this summer I'll be ordained officially into this new denomination. that we're part of. And so I'm excited to have it be in this denomination rather than in the one that honestly I'm thankful and praise God for daily that I'm no longer part of. So.
Sure. And that's a conversation for a totally another day, but if you are interested, come talk to us. And Brent, Russell, and I are all in that denomination one way or another. And so we have a lot of knowledge as well as Tyler. So if you're curious what we're actually talking about, want to go dive deeper, reach out to us. We'd love to tell you a little bit more of our personal experiences because it's all unique and different.
Yeah, don't read the news.
Yes.
In regards to
that's important.
They've made it very much about a one particular issue between the United Methodist Church and Global Methodist Church. So,
and that's still small in retrospect. Really is a small part of it, not the biggest part of it.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we'll have that conversation if you want to have that conversation with us. We'd be honored to talk more through that. One thing that you said. And it's funny, if you guys don't know, Tyler and I are pretty close. And I asked him before we started recording if anything was off limits. And he said, I'm still an open book. So I'm asking the tough questions today. I remember when you made the transition from Dalhart, you moved back to Lubbock, your hometown, and joined the police academy. And
so it's Canyon to Lubbock.
It was Canyon to Lubbock. Okay. That's right. Yep. I remember that now.
Yeah.
I'm getting old. I don't remember things.
We're not that close, I guess.
No, I guess.
Yeah.
But in that transition, and I remember what you told me was ultimately when you knew this wasn't going to work for you. And I'm not asking you to go into that. But one thing I remember your mom saying that I thought was so profound was that it was like your sacrificing moment. Like Abraham going up on the mountain and sacrificing. I thought, wow, it was so fitting to your story. Do you mind talking a little bit about that process? Because you know, I think there was a certain level of burnout leaving Dalhart, if I'm reading into that correctly. And I think a lot of us get to that point and we think, oh, we got to leave ministry, but yet maybe God never actually called you out of ministry. Can you talk about that process?
Yeah. So I'd been in Canyon for, 5 years, when I started feeling, really what was a genuine call out of ministry. And I didn't realize, honestly, I'm like, okay, God, why am I feeling called out of ministry? And I remember riding with, the senior pastor, Rick, and talking with him about, man, I'm kind of feeling like I may be called out of this. And he's like, well, where are you heading? I'm like, I'm not sure. And then, like God just setting stuff up because of prior experience working with law enforcement, feeling called maybe that, going into law enforcement would be a good fit for me. And God very much swung the door open for that, man. That's not one of those that I just, but God opened the door. I was able to get in. I was one out of, 17 recruits out of 400 people that tried out to get into the academy. So again, it was a blessing to get to go. But while I was there, I very clearly remember like going, man, I didn't realize how burned out I was in youth ministry. I had sacrificed my family on the altar of, youth kid events and sporting activity. I mean, just like taking and I had taken my family and gone, okay, I'm going to put y'all to the side so I can invest in this youth ministry. That's what I'm going to do. And it had burned me out and had burned my family out. They felt like they were on the back burner often. And I mean, I remember several weeks where I'd be out, 5 nights of the week because I'd be at some kid's extracurricular event. Because in those small towns, especially, you get invited to all these things. And so you feel like, man, I've got to go. And so I would invite my family to go, but of course my wife's like, man, hey, I've got my job, or, at that point, particular season in her life, rather, we had a little one. And so she wanted to stay home with the little one. It wasn't, conducive to leave and take her with her. And so I might take my older one, or kiddo at that time, I can take her with me, 7, but again, the wiggles. And so when I was in police academy, I certainly recognized in that season that I was burned out, that ministry had worn me out. And then I'll never forget the day that I got in my car and I was already feeling a stirring at the start of the week. it was on a Monday. I felt the initial stirring, like, man, this is not where I'm supposed to be. And I'm thinking, my God, I left everything, an amazing youth ministry. I sold my home, left my friends there, and we've moved here to Lubbock. This is where I'm supposed to be, what I'm supposed to be doing. No doubt about it. And it was like this stirring. So I prayed through it and processed through. And it was on a Thursday that I very firmly felt the Holy Spirit saying, no, Holy Spirit telling me, no, this is not what I have for you. You're not supposed to be here. And I went home on that Thursday evening, and I talked to friends and talked to pastors and just, hey, any counsel? And they said, man, if you've heard God speaking to you through the Holy Spirit saying not be there, and if you've got this peace about you, you need to walk away from it. Like, okay, I don't get it. I don't have a job. I don't know what I'm going to do. So, I turned around and went that Friday morning and resigned, which was pretty embarrassing, to be holding your uniform and stuff in this setting. And I made some sergeants pretty upset. They tried to talk me out of it, which is not normal. Normally at that point, they kind of go, well, you know, that's fine. You're just a wuss, or, you know, using explicit words or whatever. Instead, I had a sergeant who pulled me in. He's like, man, we know you're a believer, and we've seen you reading devotionals during the break, you know, break time and at lunchtime. And I just think you'd be a great, you know, great asset to the police department here in Lubbock. And I said, I have no doubt. Thank you, sir, for that. But I can't explain. I just know God's calling me away from this. And he even said, well, what about all the people you've served, those youth kids in Canyon? You're going to look like a failure to them. Do you want to really look like a failure? And And I remember telling him, I said, I don't mind looking like a failure if it means honoring where God's calling me. And all I know to tell you is just like, you know, God called Jonah to go to Nineveh. I don't know why, but right now I'm called to go. So I don't want to get swallowed by, well, I have to resign. So I left, man. And it was hard because I walked away and I went home to, and you know, my mentality of providing that I want to work. So I went home and immediately, which Dee Dee, of course, was part of this process. But I told her that, man, I need to get a job. Like, I need to start working. And she said, hey, I really want for you to just, that's fine. I know you need to start pursuing, but you need to really just be in prayer and see where God's leading you. And so I described that season, especially that week right after, as God revealing to me my Abraham Isaac moment, is what I had described it as, and still do, that God, you know, called me up the mountain and kind of see how far will you follow me? Will you go? Will you do this? Yes, I'll do it, Lord. I'm about to follow through with it. And then God goes, stop. And then God provided a ram in the thicket, right? And God turned around and renewed the covenant with Abraham. And in the same way, that was one of those seasons in my life, that particular stepping stone, if you will, Ebenezer is maybe what I would call it, where God proclaimed again, this is your call in your life. This is your call in your life, is to be a ministry. However, we're going to do it differently. We're going to do it differently because not just youth ministry, but we're going to broaden your scope, and you're not going to sacrifice your family. You're not going to sacrifice your family as you serve in ministry. In fact, you're going to recognize your first point of ministry is to your family. And so it was cool because God really did use that moment for me, David. I really believe, and I'd say this to anybody listening, I really believe that so many people in ministry experience burnout and experience broken marriages and experience hidden sins and experience brokenness that's unnecessary because they are burned out and they're looking for anything that brings them some sense of life because they're feeling burned out. And so there's such a necessity for people to be able to take a step back. Like, I really believe anyone in ministry that says, well, I have to do it and they need me, they need to take a step back and realize that there's other people that can fill in the gaps. It doesn't have to be just you. And you have to be willing to take and drop stuff at moments and go, I've got to get away because I'm on the brink of burnout. And again, taking care of your family first. So for me, man, that season, that's been probably one of the biggest, again, I'll use the term Ebenezers in my life that I've ever had, because in the moments like I've had, even in recent years, of arguing with God and going, well, I shouldn't be in ministry and I'll just go do something else. I go back to that. Well, God called me like to the academy and then turned around and called me out of it. And thinking, no, this is my call in my life. This is where I'm supposed to be. So, yeah,
and that was long-winded. No, that's why I wanted to go through that, because I think so many times we think that following God should be just this sort of upward trajectory that just, you know, it's almost like a straight line of just, we're getting closer and closer to God, and then he either comes back or we die and we're in heaven and boom, you know, we're there, you know, and sometimes ministry looks like,
it's a roller coaster. Yeah,
it's a roller coaster, right? Sometimes you're flipping backwards, you know, sometimes it even seems like you're literally doing everything you just did all the way back, and then you start back at the beginning and you're like, now what? Like, I just did all of that, and God just seemed to, you know, it just seems like everything is just blowing up around me. And I think you hit on something huge there. And I know we do talk a lot about ministry burnout, but I think it has to be talked about. I mean, I think you hit it right on the nail. I mean, how many times do we get that alert through an email or Facebook or something like that, where it says, you know, fill in the blank celebrity pastor asked to resign because of X, Y, and Z. And you're just like, no, not again. And I even remember it happening in local churches where we used to serve. I mean, it's a terrible thing that's happening in the church, and it's I would say it's even plaguing the church in a lot of ways. And it's because we don't want to face the fact that we're burning out. And I think it's almost like there's this shame and guilt. Like, as ministry people, we're supposed to be smiling. It's like everyone's happy and everything's great all the time. And if I'm not happy in my church, then there's something wrong with me. And what if they fire me for it? What if my church doesn't give me the grace that I feel like I need in this season and period?
Yeah. I think you're right, man. I think a lot of people in ministry, and I'm going to say this, it might offend some people, but I think a lot of pastors and ministry staff people are borderline narcissistic. And so there's this savior complex that we live in, that somehow I'm going to rescue the world and watch this. And a lot of the reason why those people are in ministry is because you have to have somebody who's got a heart to care for people, right? Otherwise you're not going to be as effective. But you have to watch, again, that narcissistic mentality that, well, it's all me or no one else can do it. Only I can do this. And there's got to be more of a, I need to be, and really for me, what's been revolutionary is equipping and empowering other people to do the roles of the church, and encouraging them and helping them grow in that, and helping them get to a place where they can do the roles that you're doing. I mean, discipling people, right? That's discipleship. But I do think, again, a lot of people really are experiencing burnout more than they realize, and they're trying to grasp and figure out what's going on. And man, that's the other reason why accountability is such a big thing. Like, having a group of friends, having your family, like being real with your spouse, like, or with your kids, like, does it feel like, you know, daddy's gone all the time? Or do you feel like you're getting enough time with daddy? And of course, sometimes kids are going to be dramatic. A 14-year-old, almost 15-year-old daughter is going to be like, nobody loves me. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think there's got to be also these people in your life that are willing to speak boldly to you and honestly to you and say, hey man, like, so you're really overextending yourself. You're saying yes to a lot of different things that's causing you to say no to the things that God wants you to say yes to. And I really think, like, for instance, for a family, especially, every time I say yes to some event, I'm saying no to being home with my family. I'm saying no to spending time with my kids or spending time with my wife. And that could be not just on a physical level, but it can also be emotional. Maybe it's not even that you're saying yes to something that's going to take a lot of your time, but maybe you're saying yes to something that's going to be emotionally draining. So by the time you get home, your wife's like, I need to just spend time with you and talk with you, and I need you here emotionally present with me, right? Because most women, no offense to any women who aren't this way, but I think most women, their love language is quality time. They want that quality time, right? And so maybe I've given my quality time to something pastoral wise, and there are emergencies, don't get me wrong, but maybe I chose that day to go to the assisted living center and go visit folks, and it just wore me out. And so when I get home, I'm not available as much as my wife needs me in that quality time. So recognizing our humanity, man, and recognizing, like, my job is not to point people to me and how I could save them, but point them to Jesus and how Jesus has saved them.
There's one thing you told me when I was 18 years old that I have, it's stuck with me ever since, all these 15 years, is that, oh, it's good. It's real good.
Okay. Okay.
May not even remember saying it, but you said one of the best metrics to whether or not you're being effective in ministry is when someone that you have been given the opportunity to disciple goes and takes your job one day. And I remember thinking, like, whoa, how cool is that? Like, imagine you have a sixth grader in your ministry, and they go all the way through your youth ministry, and they graduate and they go to college for 4 years. And in that time, you knew even before they graduated high school that God was calling them to ministry, and they come in and, they come back to your church and they're serving, and they're, or maybe you have a college in your town and they continue to serve like through, as like a college leader for your student ministry. And they begin to feel like God is putting them in a place of ministry, and you're feeling like God is saying, you should take my role. Like, mm-hmm. I have joked for a long time about it, but every time a student tells me, I really feel like God is calling me to student minister, I'm like, fantastic, let's get you ready so you can take my job one day. And they're like, whoa, I don't want to take your job. Yeah. I'm like, but think about it. Like, the best thing that we can do is to equip other people that will then take that role, whether it's literally our job here in like where I'm at in Snyder, or where you're at in Linda, or somewhere else, you know, ultimately raising up the next generation of leaders and pastors and community leaders. And it's an incredible opportunity. I think there's no better passing of the torch for me.
Yeah.
If God says it's time to go, then someone that I've had the blessing to work with, and they get to take my job, like, that would be the biggest honor I could even imagine.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think at the same time, I'll say that there's also a lot of pastors and people in youth ministry who pride themselves in going, I've got this many people to go from here and become, you know, missionaries, sure, or become pastors. And sometimes there's a bragging thing. And I just remind anyone who is leading in youth ministry, I mean, our job is to empower and equip everyone to remember that we're called to the priesthood of believers. We're all called to go out and share the good news. And just because, in fact, I would say that people who are more effective at sharing the gospel are people who do not work in the church. Because who comes to the church? Primarily, it's people who believe, right? Mm-hmm. But where your people who are unbelievers are at are typically out in the world. So if you're working a secular job, you're going to have more of an opportunity to engage. In fact, if there's a youth pastor who has an evangelistic heart and really wants to share the good news, that it's like, I just, you know, it's primarily kids that come to church are primarily all believers. They're all Christians. Instead of panicking and going, well, I have to figure out a way how to reach out and bring kids in, instead, go substitute teach. Go be a substitute teacher one day a week. You'll be in the school, and I guarantee you there's going to be people in that classroom that are not believers. And granted, you can't be standing up in front of the classroom and be like, hey, let me talk to y'all about Jesus. But it will give you an opportunity to interact with people who are not believers, and to be right there on the front lines. So again, I think empowering and equipping people is beyond just empowering and equipping them to getting to full-time ministry. And I think people have got to be so discerning on that too, man, because there's been a lot of people who believe they had a call into ministry. And to me, that's just your lunch digesting. I don't know if it was a call, right? You're just, and so really processing through, man, is this God calling me into this? Because it's a commitment. It's not just a commitment on your time. It's a commitment on your resources, outside just your time, your finances. You and I know that it's not a high grossing salary. I mean, it is what it is. And so it's a call in that. It's a call for a family too. Like, I can only imagine someone who marries, you know, a person who is saying, you're going to follow me in my career, but they feel called into ministry. That doesn't work very well. And so, for instance, my wife, she knew that, and with us being, you know, with me being in ministry, she's like, man, wherever God calls you, that's where we're going. And I think that's important. But, man, we should be equipping and empowering people. Like, if you work at McDonald's, like, man, you talk to people about Jesus at McDonald's, you'd be a light right there at McDonald's. If you if you were, I don't know why I'm picking on McDonald's work-wise. If you work at AutoZone, if you work out in the oil field, if you are a farmer, I mean, wherever it's at, when you go to that co-op as a farmer, man, share the good news. If you work in the city, man, share the good news. Be a light wherever you're at.
For sure, man. Man, it's been such a good conversation, and I could keep this going for hours, honestly. Mm-hmm. But we are hitting that close to an hour mark, and I want to value your time and the listeners' time. What is some advice that you would give someone who feels called to transitioning into other roles in ministry?
Into other roles? Mm-hmm. I think number one, spend time not talking to other people and seeking affirmation from other people and seek the Lord and his call in your life. I think a lot of folks in ministry, when they start feeling that call, they ask people, well, can you see me doing this? And instead of doing that, seek God. And I think God will speak to you clearly. And then as you feel more clear discernment that, yes, God's calling me towards that, then you might go visit with your close friends who are going to be honest and real with you, and see kind of where their heart is. And it'll be interesting, just in the same way that when I told my wife that I was feeling that, you know, call, my wife was like, well, I've known that all along. And in fact, she told me in that time, like, God told me long ago that I was going to be married to a pastor. So I already knew that someday you're going to be a senior pastor at a church.
I remember her telling me that when I was serving with you. I mean, she told me that a long time ago.
I didn't know that when you knew that. So just for the record, I didn't know that.
I think we always just assumed you knew too, if that makes sense.
No, not till post police academy and moving forward. And so, you know, I think that's number one is seek God. Where's that discernment from God? And then you talk to your close friends and kind of see where their heart is. And I think as you go through just some of the logistical, what do I need to do? What does my education look like? What is my, you know, because as much as I fight with things of that nature, you know, I don't like the institute stuff. At the same time, just like any other trade school or any other thing, there's steps you have to go through in order to become whatever that particular trade is, right? To work in that. And so in the same thing in ministry, what does it look like in my particular denomination? What's required for me to be a pastor? Obviously part of that conversation for someone who is navigating, one of your closest people, hopefully, is your senior pastor you work with. Mm-hmm. And that you're talking with your senior pastor or talking with an associate pastor, and talking with people in ministry and visiting.
And if I can interject right there, just I've been the guy who didn't have a good relationship with senior pastor, not from a lack of trying, but because we, in our denomination, one of the biggest drawbacks to the rotating pastor was that we would often get pastors who were at the age of retirement, and they were just waiting for that to be old enough, but they had burned out and checked out many, many years before. And I went through, probably a 6-year process of having no one. And really, when I look at my tenure in the Methodist Church, specifically, I feel I've only served two senior pastors who were genuinely not only passionate about me, but interested. And Rick, who we both served, and I still talk to quite a bit. And my current senior pastor, who is someone I'm very grateful for. He's 35, so we're the same age ultimately. He was youth pastor in this church 12 years ago. And so he knows what it means to be a youth pastor at this church. He knows what it means to be a youth pastor. And it gave him a place of compassion that many senior pastors who, as you were talking about earlier, that come straight out of seminary maybe don't have, because they've never been in that role. And so him and I just, we click and we gel, and it's something that I really appreciate. But if you're someone who was like me for the longest time and you don't have a pastor in your church that you feel that you can connect with, go seek one out. One of the best things I did was, besides just calling you and annoying you when I didn't have other people, was I went next door to First Baptist. And I know that might sound crazy, but I went to the pastor there because he was invested in me and he cared about me and he was willing to have a conversation with me. And so anytime I felt like things weren't working, I just went next door and just said, hey, let's talk, you know, seek out someone. If you don't have someone, find someone. And if you need help finding someone, reach out to us. We'd love to connect you with someone who, whether that's us or a senior pastor we know that would be willing to talk, because I know for sure mine would be honored to have a conversation with you if you don't have anybody.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think, again, finding those people that are genuinely invested in your well-being is a huge part of it. And a pastor, I think, again, talking to people who are in that position you're looking at transitioning into and feeling called to transition into. And then I think as you make that transition and start moving forward, I think being confident, being bold, and at the same time being humble and willing to listen and to grow, being gracious to yourself, because there's lots of mistakes, right? I'll never forget in the particular denomination that, you know, we're in, I'm not allowed to give communion unless I'm ordained. So the first time leading a communion service, right? I mean, I was a little overwhelmed by it, and that's okay. So be gracious to yourself. Like that's perfectly normal. Or if you've never preached, like be gracious to yourself, get up and preach. Don't beat yourself up for not being, you know, Billy Graham when you stand up to proclaim the word. But at the same time, be bold and confident. Know that the huge thing again is knowing that if God's called you to it, you're not going to fail in it. If God's called you to it and you're seeking to live where he's called you, you're not going to fail in it because God's called you to it. And God, I've always pictured God's right there. You know, literally God is within me, but he's got my back and he's given me the strength and the ability to persevere, to make it through the daily, you know, manna, right. And providing for me in the wilderness. So take a deep breath and just go, okay, I can't help but think, even going back to that, the quelling manna, you know, Moses and how he felt, but Lord, I'm a stutterer, right? You know, my speech is not well. And God going, don't worry. I'll provide someone that can help you with that. Don't worry. I'll provide. But once you know that God's called you and you're like beyond a shadow of a doubt, man, I've prayed and I've sought the Lord on this before anybody else. And then I've talked with my close family and friends, and I've talked with, you know, people in leadership who are invested in me. And I have affirmation. Once you know you're called, you better be bold in it and be confident in it. And the honest truth is, and you know this, David, from experience, and I know this from experience, that when you walk into a leadership role and you're living in insecurity, it takes the focus away from what you're called to be focusing on. And so insecurity makes us focus on ourselves, right? And it keeps us from focusing on. And so if I'm stepping into the pulpit and the whole time I'm standing up there, I'm insecure as I bring the word and I'm thinking, I hope people care about this word. Well, I'm taking the attention away from where the attention needs to be, which is the proclamation of the word and people hearing God's word, right? So be confident, move forward and be bold in it too. Don't be afraid to make mistakes at the same time and live in grace and be willing to be stretched. It's a good thing. Discomfort, I think, is one of the best things in ministry. It's constant. I think that's why the income is often so how it is, right? Paul being a tent maker or you know, the disciples wandering in the wilderness with Jesus, you know, and not having a home, being uprooted. It's those moments of discomfort is where we grow the most. And so I think that being stretched and challenged is a good thing.
Man. Tyler Looney always makes me feel better about life. Man, just in general, man, I've really enjoyed this conversation. We're going to wrap up for our listeners. Man, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
For sure, man. All right. So we would like to invite you guys to reach out to us on social media or send us an email to podcast@studentministryconversations.org. We would love to set up a time to talk with you, or maybe even have you on the show if you feel like there's something that you would like to join the conversation in. We'd also be honored if you would share our podcast with your youth pastor friends or on social media. Tag us on a specific episode that really stood out to you on your favorite platform by using @talkstudent. Again, Tyler, thank you for joining us, and we hope that you all have a really great week, and we'll catch you on the next one.